From the Danker's studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the show, KCPW's Ryan Cunningham sits down for a conversation with advice columnist and gay rights advocate Dan Savage. Savage is most well-known for his syndicated column, Savage Love, and is also the founder of the It Gets Better Project, providing support for young people bullied over sexual identity issues. Savage speaks with us about that work and gives us his perspective on religious attitudes towards homosexuality.
When I was, a young adult and I realized that what the church said about me was wrong, it got me to thinking I was a terrible person and Jesus hates me and I'm going to go to hell. I started to think, well, the church is obviously wrong about me and this. I wonder what else they're wrong about.
That conversation, an excerpt of last night's town hall on the Affordable Care Act, and the local news just ahead on The Rundown. And thanks once again for tuning into The Rundown. A little bit later in the program, we'll feature KCPW's Ryan Cunningham in a conversation with author, advice columnist, and gay rights advocate Dan Savage. But first up, we have these headlines. Governor Gary Herbert has reached a breakthrough with federal officials to open Utah's 5 national parks. Herbert's spokeswoman, Ali Isom, says Utah would have to use its own money to call back park workers, and that it costs up to $50,000 a day to operate just one of them, Zion National Park. It's not clear if the federal government would reimburse Utah later. Isom says many details need to be worked out and that the Utah legislature would have to appropriate the money. The Obama administration said earlier on Thursday that it will allow states to use their own money to reopen some national parks that have been closed because of the government shutdown. Governors in at least 4 states, including Arizona, Colorado, and South Dakota, have asked for that authority. In related news, state officials say Utah's unemployment claims have jumped more than 3 times their normal rate as thousands of furloughed federal workers have filed for benefits since the partial shutdown of the U.S. government on October 1st. State Department of Workforce Services spokesman Nick Dunn says there have been almost 7,000 claims from October 1st through October 7th, and more than 4,600 of those were federal employees. The Salt Lake Tribune first reported the jump in jobless claims on Thursday. Dunn says that if Congress approves back pay for the furloughed workers, they will be required to repay the benefits. He says as long as the shutdown in Washington, D.C. is not long-term, Utah can handle the uptick in claims for several weeks and possibly even months. Dealing with large data sets, such as with social media, customer preference, and financial information, requires expertise in not just computer science, but also how power is consumed and temperatures regulated during the computing process. A new program to teach undergraduates about handling big data for future work in the big data industry has been created at the University of Utah. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has the story.
Finding ways to handle, sort, and store large amounts of data requires a broad understanding of engineering, says Valerio Pascucci, the director of the Center for Extreme Data Management at the University of Utah. He says people who want to work for companies such as Oracle, eBay, and Goldman Sachs in their large data centers need training in multiple disciplines.
People have to deal with large high-performance computing platforms, so you need a lot of computer science knowledge. But then they consume a lot of power, so you need a strong electrical engineering background and as well as mechanical engineering to deal with all the heat and cooling issue.
To address the gap that exists in current training, the University of Utah College of Engineering is creating a new certificate program that gives undergraduates the opportunity to learn these different disciplines.
And so in this certificate, we structure a number of classes that give this breadth of preparation in those 3 different areas. And while people will still be specialized more in one of those, they will complement a classical bachelor with this type of certificate so that they can kind of work better in this type of environment.
Pascucci says they've been approached by a number of companies that are looking for this type of training for people that they hire and have agreed to provide internships as part of the program.
Students that come into the certificate will be immediately connected to the industry and get some initial jobs that will help them also support themselves throughout the education, but also they will start working, gaining real hands-on experience in those environments.
Pascucci says they are also looking to add a certificate program for people who already have their degrees and are working for one of these companies, so they can come back to school and get additional training. The program is expected to start in January, and organizers hope to get around 20 students to join per year. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
Government employees of the new National Security Agency Data Storage Center in Utah will be treated to a clean highway on their commute to work, but it will come in the form of inventive political activism. A local chapter of the protest group Restore the Fourth has adopted a section of Utah State Route 68 that passes near the NSA data center in Bluffdale. The group, which is opposed to the intelligence gathering practices of the NSA, hopes to picket the NSA while they are out picking up litter. The idea to adopt the highway came as a creative attempt to counter NSA efforts to keep protesters away from the facility. Group organizer Lorena Potter explains.
2 weeks after the July 4th protest, and after we were told that we had to leave that vacant lot across from the NSA data center entrance, we got together and had kind of like a round table meeting where we were throwing out ideas. And this was one of the ideas that was thrown out there at that meeting. So each of us was then, we took what projects we wanted to work on from there, and this was mine.
Thus far, the NSA has had little to say about the group's highway adoption. In a statement, NSA spokeswoman Vinnie Vines says, quote, highway adoptions are not part of NSA's federal mission. But as Potter says, Restore the Fourth isn't necessarily looking to get the attention of NSA officials.
I don't think that they'll actually react to us. I think that this isn't really a huge thing to them. However, what it does is it really draws attention to Restore the Fourth, and it brings together people that are from different backgrounds. This doesn't affect just, you know, Republicans or Democrats. This affects everybody.
Utah Department of Transportation officials have approved but not yet formally issued adopt-a-highway rights to Restore the Fourth. Potter says she plans to get started with the cleanup as soon as she has the contract in hand. Officials say that could happen within days. The NSA previously said the new facility in Bluffdale was supposed to open October 1st. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says that date has been delayed by electrical troubles at the facility. And finally today, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is scheduled to be the keynote speaker at a conference this week in Salt Lake City. The Utah Republican Party says Rice will be speaking Friday at Senator Orrin Hatch's annual Utah Women's Conference. This year's theme is Discovering the Diversity and Unity of Women. Rice, who is now a professor of political science at Stanford University, was in the news recently after her name surfaced as one of the people expected to be on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee next year. And that's our local news summary for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. Now on The Rundown, we're going to play an excerpt of last night's town hall meeting on the Affordable Care Act called Welcome to Obamacare. The event was held at the Salt Lake City Public Library and was presented by KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune. It was hosted by the Salt Lake Tribune's Jennifer Napier Pierce and featured panelists Celia Nash Underwood, an insurance expert, Jason Stevenson, Education and Communications Director at the Utah Health Policy Project, Republican Representative Jim Dunnigan of Taylorsville, chair of the state's Health System Reform Task Force, and Nathan Checkitz, Health Reform Coordinator at the Utah Department of Health.
Before we get to the questions, though, can you sort of lay out the new landscape? The online insurance marketplace opened a little over a week ago, and tell us a little bit about this new structure. Jason, I'll have you do that introduction, if you would.
Sure. Well, of course, the title of today's event is Are You Ready for Obamacare? But I don't think healthcare.gov, the website, was ready for Obamacare or prime time, because that's been the frustrating aspect of the past week, is that the site's been slow, it's been glitchy, they're trying to fix it, but a lot of people are still not getting through. And all I can say is that it will get fixed and it will be ready, and there is a long enrollment window going until the spring that you can sign up for this new insurance. So the marketplace is available, although maybe not as accessible as we would like. There are going to be 96 insurance plans listed on it, maybe 94 actually, by six insurers on the individual marketplace. There's also going to be Avenue H, which is the small business marketplace for the state, which is going to offer plans for small businesses, I believe, under 50 employees. And so that's where we are. The websites are here, and we're still just doing a lot of education about it because people are hoping those doors of the website open a little bit more in the next couple of weeks so they can go in and see for it themselves. But people are signing up. Not many, but some are.
What kind of demand are you seeing here in the state?
Well, a lot of people, of course, have gone to the website and been frustrated by not getting through. And so that's when we get their phone calls asking for advice and for information. So for those people, we actually send them to the Department of Insurance website. Here in Utah, where you can actually look at a PDF that has all of the rate information for all of the plans here in Utah. It's a little bit cumbersome. It's 300 pages long, but it does have the info that will be on the website eventually. And then we also send them to the Kaiser Family Foundation, www.kff.org. They've got a great premium calculator there to figure out what kind of cost you might have for this new insurance and what kind of subsidies you're going to get. So these are the workarounds we've developed. We're getting a lot of calls and we're doing a lot of events and meeting people who are really, really excited about the insurance and are patient for now, but obviously really want to get through that door.
Representative Dunnigan, you've been interested in health reform for many years now. The government is not setting up an insurance plan. It's setting up a place where people can shop, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So health reform changes the landscape for consumers in some significant ways, one of which is you can't be denied insurance if you have a pre-existing condition. What are some of the other ways that this new Obamacare is changing the insurance arena?
Well, let me just touch on the one you mentioned because that's an important one. So starting January 1st, effective dates, there are no more health questions to determine if you're going to be eligible for coverage. There is one, and that is if you use tobacco, and your rate can be higher if you use tobacco. But other than that, there's a age compression, and what that means is that the rates for the older folks will come down a little bit, and the rates for the younger folks will go up. The younger folks will be subsidizing the older folks a little bit more than they are now. And then there's also, so the rates going forward will be based on family size, where you live, whether or not you use tobacco, and your age, but they won't be based on health status.
Okay. And Nate, of course, the state has its hand in all of this, operating the Small Business Healthcare Exchange called Avenue H, and administering the Medicaid program. How will Medicaid and Medicaid enrollment, how will that process be affected by Obamacare here in Utah?
So most of the changes for the Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, come on January 1st for our programs. And some of the changes that are happening there is that the income levels for our children programs are increasing slightly, and that will allow more children to qualify for Medicaid. We're also removing, as required by the Affordable Care Act, some asset tests or resource tests that currently exist for these programs. So additional adults and children will begin qualifying for Medicaid. The state estimates that somewhere around 50 or 60,000 individuals that will gain coverage based on those mandatory changes. And then as the state's really been going into the larger discussion about whether or not it should do the optional expansion to adults that are currently not eligible for Medicaid, and that's been the process that the governor's work group has been looking at this summer, trying to decide whether or not what options are available to the state in that arena.
Okay. I want to get to a couple of our email questions. Craig typed in, will the Affordable Health Care Act cover dental and vision, such as my kids' braces and my contacts? What do you think?
Yeah, I can answer that.
Celia.
Part of the Affordable Care Act was there's essential benefits, and part of the essential benefits was to cover pediatric vision and dental, and it's not to cover braces. It's just for the annual exam preventive for the dental and for the vision.
Question on the email. Emily writes, how does the ACA affect same-sex couples in the state of Utah who are not allowed to have health insurance coverage for their partner?
We've looked into that a little bit.
Jason?
Celia, too. There actually was a recent ruling that said that if a same-sex couple is legally married in another state that recognizes that marriage, the place of celebration, they can actually come back here to Utah and file their taxes as if they were married, based on the DOMA ruling recently from the Supreme Court, and also file for the premium subsidies on the marketplace using a married or a joint filing. Now, how that reflects on state taxes, we're still waiting to hear out, and Celia might know a little bit more about this as well.
Well, not on that, but on, through the Avenue H, they do allow for domestic partners for the businesses already, so that's something that's already available to small employers going through Avenue H.
Basically, our premium is going to rise or taxes are going to go up.
Jason.
Well, this is how I answer questions like that, is I have a nanny. She's 62 years old. She watches my two-year-old son. She had a pre-existing condition that meant that when she went out to buy insurance, it was going to cost her $1,000 a month. So she wasn't able to afford that. Her pre-existing condition was that, well, I won't get into it. But when we ran the numbers for her, her insurance is going to cost $230 a month under the Affordable Care Act, $900 to $230. And she's going to be eligible for Medicare in a couple years. And by being insured and being healthy for a couple of years before she gets on Medicare, she's going to be a healthier person for the rest of her life. Not only, you know, I care because she watches my son, but I care about her because I want her to really enjoy her grandchildren and her life. And so being insured means a lot both for her and for many people in her family. And that's what I think about when I think about what the Affordable Care Act does in Utah and in our country.
That was an excerpt from last night's town hall on the Affordable Care Act, hosted by KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find the full podcast of this event at our website, kcpw.org. And now in the program, we feature a conversation with sex advice columnist and gay rights advocate Dan Savage. Savage is known nationally for his syndicated column, Savage Love, as well as his podcast, Savage Lovecast. He has frequented many national news and media outlets, such as Real Time with Bill Maher, The Colbert Report, and This American Life. Savage also started the It Gets Better Project, which aims to provide support for young people who are bullied over sexual identity issues. Savage held a Q&A session at the University of Utah on Wednesday night as part of that university's Pride Week. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham had a chance to sit down with him beforehand.
Welcome to Utah.
Thanks.
And happy birthday.
Thanks.
I heard your birthday was just a couple days ago. I don't know if you heard, but there was the LDS Church just had their conference this weekend.
I was reading about it.
And the gay rights, homosexuality came up as an issue, as it does almost every conference, I think, for the LDS Church. How do you view members of the LDS Church that are sympathetic to gay rights?
Well, certainly welcome the support of members of the LDS Church who are sympathetic. You know, I'm Catholic. A majority of Catholics support marriage equality. The Catholic hierarchy does not. I think you'll probably get to that point, too, with the Mormon Church. I mean, the Mormon Church's opposition to gay rights is sort of on a collision course with the Mormon Church's emphasis on family and children and those bonds and those relationships. Increasingly, people are not willing to sacrifice their own children on the altar of this dated dogma and this hateful ideology. You know, what the leader of the Mormon Church said was nothing unexpected. It would just be nice at some point to hear the leader of the Mormon Church, as the leader of the Catholic Church now seems to be doing, to draw a distinction between Mormon doctrine and civil law, religious law and civil law. You can belong to a faith. You can lead a faith that believes that same-sex marriage is wrong and isn't allowed, and you can still sign off on living in a society where that is legal and permissible for people who are not Mormons. Mormons don't drink caffeine, and they're not trying to knock the coffee out of other people's hands through the law. That's all. We're just asking gay people, including Mormon gay people, for the same deal that Mormons made with Starbucks.
Why is that so hard for the LDS Church?
Because of sex and Christianity's eternal problem with what sex actually is. It's not just about gay people and gay sex. It's about non-procreative sex. It's about sex for pleasure, which is most of the sex straight people have. Straight people have a lot of sex and a couple of children, unless they're Mormons and they really bang them out, or traditional Catholics and they really bang them out. But sex is for pleasure. And, you know, the church, my church, the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church has always taken this position that sex is for providing more worshipful sort of zombie-eyed followers for Jesus, and not what it is actually for, which is cementing human relationships for intimacy, for release, and occasionally for making a baby. Humans have 1,000 sexual contacts for every one live birth. Clearly, human sexuality is not about babies. It's about connection. And it is about connection for gay people in the same way it's about connection for straight people. And churches can't reconcile to that because they run around saying that sex is only for procreation when they know that that's not true.
That's a huge tenet of the LDS Church's belief on sexuality, that it's for procreation.
Right, and they're wrong. And the Catholic Church is wrong on that too.
Knowing that, can you be Mormon and gay at the same time?
That's not for me to decide. I'm not the leader of the Mormon Church. I found it impossible to be gay and Catholic at the same time, not because you know, I was in a sulk because the Catholic Church said nasty things about me. But because when I was, you know, a young adult and I realized that what the church said about me was wrong, it got me to thinking not, you know, I was a terrible person and Jesus hates me and I'm going to go to hell. I started to think, well, the church is obviously wrong about me and this. I wonder what else they're wrong about. And when I began to pull that thread, the entire garment unraveled. And I'm surprised when I meet people who are gay, who are still Mormon or still Catholic or still evangelical Protestants, because you would think the, you know, that the advantage you enjoy as a gay person when you're brought into conflict with the faith into which you were born is that it's going to cause you to think more critically, not just about what your church says about gay people, but what your church says about everything. And I don't think many faiths can withstand that kind of intelligent scrutiny.
What do you say about people who say they're culturally Mormon, or you've said you're culturally Catholic?
Yeah, like, I don't have a problem with that. It was really my Jewish friends who brought me to cultural Catholicism. I would hang, you know, I have really good close Jewish friends in Seattle who would get together and do Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. And I was just like, oh, so you guys are believers? And they're like, no, we don't believe. We don't believe in God. We're not waiting for a Messiah. Eat bacon whenever we want. But they would do these things that affirm their cultural identity as Jews. And that really unlocked for me kind of this reconciliation with the faith of my parents and the faith in which I was raised, that I could tap into what was good there culturally and affirming and comforting culturally without having to sign off on the virgin birth and people floating off into heaven and resurrections and stuff that did not happen.
So is there advice you would give to someone who maybe is of the LDS faith, who is struggling with their sexuality? What would you say to them?
Sexual reproduction, I think, is a half a billion years old or a quarter of a billion years old. It's stronger than any religion. Sex has existed longer than the Mormon Church has existed. A lot of things have existed longer than the Mormon Church has existed. Sex has existed longer than Christianity. Sex has existed longer than our species, longer than the current arrangement of the continents. Sex is older and stronger and more powerful than your faith, and sex will win in the end. Look at Ted Haggard. So, you know, in a battle between your faith and your sexuality will win. So you need to come to some sort of rational accommodation for your sexuality. The longer and harder you fight your sexuality, the more miserable you're going to be and the more pathetic and tragic the sexuality's ultimate triumph is going to be. You're going to look like a Ted Haggard or a George Rekers or a Larry Craig in the end. You're not going to get away with running from your sexuality.
Would you feel comfortable living in Utah?
Oh, my God. I barely feel comfortable living in Seattle because I'm from Chicago. So anything smaller than Chicago, I feel very uncomfortable in. So Chicago or New York are basically the only cities in the country I feel comfortable in. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable living anywhere in Utah but Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City is where the freaks and the refugees wash up. And I'm comfortable in big cities. And everything I hear from people who live here is that it's very diverse and very tolerant. It's everything that a city is supposed to be. It's just surrounded by a sea of nutcases. And I say that in the same way I would say it about Catholic nutcases.
Of course, you have your detractors on the right, but you have some on the left as well, people from the LGBT community who might be here tonight, actually.
Well, they're welcome to come.
Are you discouraged by that? Are you encouraged by that? Is that confusing?
Well, it's just part of the job. You know, you write things, people get mad at you, you have your agenda and you're pushing it, other people have their own agenda. The only people who would really be sort of disillusioned by that are people with irrational expectations about what a community is. When two straight people disagree, people don't go, oh, look at the division in the straight community. They just think there are two people who disagree. But when two queer people disagree, suddenly it's evidence of some larger ill. And it's not. It's just healthy intra-community debate.
Once again, that was KCPW's Ryan Cunningham speaking with nationally syndicated columnist and gay rights advocate Dan Savage. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us. Thanks once again for tuning into The Rundown. That's all the time we have for the program today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, we'll take a closer look at the news out of Washington with the Salt Lake Tribune's Thomas Burr. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in today. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.